Rays Radio Network proudly presents This Week in Rays Baseball.
Drilled to center field and deep. Back out of his seat, to the track, to the wall, it's gone! Evan Longoria with a two-run home run to straightaway center, and he gives the Rays a 6-4 lead here in the ninth.
Coming up, we'll recap the action from this past week, take a look around Major League Baseball, and sit down for in-depth interviews with the biggest names in the game.
1-2. Got a pitch. Got him swinging, and the ball game is over as Jake McGee strikes out the side in the ninth inning.
Here's your host, Neil Solons.
Good afternoon. Welcome to our show. And this Sunday, as the Rays get set to wrap up a series with Boston. Now, we were to be over the Guy Harvey Outpost of Trade Winds Island Resorts on St. Pete Beach. The party has moved inside. It is going on a watch party today over at the Rumfish Grill in the same location. So if you're headed out to the Guy Harvey Outpost, there is a Rays watch party again over at the Rumfish Grill instead of outside. Now, on our show today, we'll chat with Erasmo Ramirez about his success this year. We'll also share a conversation with David Price before he was dealt to Toronto, and we'll look back at the trading deadline, plus much more. We start, though, with highlights from the week gone by. Now, Sunday, the Rays were looking to win a series against the Orioles, and Baltimore scored 5 early runs against Matt Moore before the Rays got on track offensively against Wei-Yin Chen.
Here's a drive to deep left by Logan Forsythe to the wall. It's gone! Longo and Logan go back-to-back. It's now 5-2.
Now, the back-to-back homers by Forsythe and Evan Longoria, though, were all the Rays would get in a 5-2 defeat, and with that loss, the Rays dropped 2 of 3 to the O's. Monday, the Rays opened a series against the Tigers. Anibal Sanchez hadn't lost in 8 starts, but on this night, the Rays got to him, as Jake Odorizzi's battery mate had a big night.
The right-hand batter hits it in the air to deep left field. Cespedes back looks up, and this is long gone. A homer for Casale. I guess that's why he's in there for a third straight day, because he gives the Rays a 1-0 lead in the third.
Kurt Casale hit not one but 2 home runs, and thanks to 6 strong innings by Jake Odorizzi, he beat Detroit 5-2. Tuesday, the Rays announced before the game they traded David DeJesus to the Angels for minor league 20-year-old reliever Edouard Lopez.
It's a blessing in disguise. You know, it stinks leaving these guys that, you know, you work all season, all spring training and through the season with, to put ourselves in a situation to get to the playoffs. And, you know, we're right there. But, you know, that's a tough part, leaving. But, you know, I'm going to a first-place team, and I get to move closer to where I live.
Then the Rays faced David Price, getting their former teammate in what turned out to be his last start for Detroit. And Casale's great week continued against a fellow Vanderbilt Commodore.
Here's a swing and a fly ball, deep right center field. Back at it is Martinez to the wall, looks up, it's gone! Kurt Casale with his second consecutive 2-homer day! And the Rays take a 5-1 lead. The fans want a curtain call, and David Price is going to step off the rubber and let him do it. Classy move by Price.
And Kurt Casale became the first Rays rookie catcher ever to homer on back-to-back days, and he helped Tampa Bay to a resounding 10-2 win over Price and the Tigers. Wednesday, the Rays looked for a sweep, and Chris Archer was on his game.
The pitch on its way. Swing and a miss. He struck him out. And the Tigers go down here on the sixth. That's also 10 strikeouts. Chris Archer has been perfect through 6.
But an error by his dribble, Cabrera, who homered for the only Rays run, led to 2 unearned runs in the 7th, and the Rays fell 2-1 as Tampa Bay slipped to 51-52, entering an off day Thursday. Friday, the Rays began a road trip against the Red Sox in Boston. Tampa Bay gave up 3 unearned runs in the first inning, allowing the Red Sox to take a lead. The Rays came back, moving in front on a John Jaso 2-run double in the 7th, only to see Boston answer.
Swing and a high fly ball, deep to left field. Matuk looks up, and it is off the top of the wall and into the monster seats. A 2-run home run for Mike Napoli, and the Red Sox have taken a 6-5 lead.
All but one of the Red Sox runs came with 2 out. Tampa Bay eventually fell to Boston 7-5. And then yesterday, Matt Moore gave up 6 runs the first 3 innings. Down 6-0 in the third, the Rays mounted a furious rally.
Here's a swing and a fly ball to left center field, and wouldn't you know it, it's going to get down and go to the wall. Jaso around second on his way to third. Jackie Bradley Jr. up with it. They're going to wave Jaso home. Bogaerts relay to the plate. Not in time. RBI pinch hit double for Brandon Guyer, and the Rays have cut the lead to 1. It's 7-6.
But that was as close as the Rays got as they fell 11-7. Matt Moore learned after the game he'd be optioned to Durham. Steven Souza Jr. suffered a fractured left wrist after being hit by a Joe Kelly pitch. More on all of that with Mark Topkin live from Boston a little bit later. Hey, why be adorable when you can be fedorable? That's right, Rays fans. Come to Tropicana Field next Saturday, August 8th, to watch the Rays take on the Mets. And all fans receive a Rays fedora while supplies last. Call 888-FAN-RAYS or visit RaysBaseball.com for tickets and more information. Rays up. You're listening to This Week in Rays Baseball. Coming up, what's the reason for Erasmo Ramirez's success? And who in his family has that positive demeanor? Find out right after this on the Rays Baseball Network. We continue on This Week in Rays Baseball, and our guest this week is Erasmo Ramirez. Erasmo, you've had such a terrific year so far. Has this been the most fun, the most you've enjoyed in Major League Baseball?
Well, telling the truth, for sure. It's going to be just the best year, even after I debuted. That was the happiest year I spent anywhere. But after the trade and get another opportunity for Met and other guys and be like around different teammates, a bunch of young guys, and sad because, you know, a lot of injuries, but at the same time we just been figuring out how to do it and try to enjoy the game and just go and do everything we can do in the game. And so far I just happy about what's happening to me. Got the chance to get the opportunity, the team to win, that the get told the team I'm going to be just working every day and try to do my best all the time.
Who has been the most helpful to you among the coaches? Who's been the most helpful coach and why?
Well, I'm going to say it was both pitching coach, Hickey and Stan. They've both been close to me and just talking to me about mistake pitches and what's my strong part, my weaknesses, and try to just remember me what made me succeed every time I go there and get the win and get the ground ball, get the pitch whenever I want. They just every day just help me to remember what I did.
What have you changed? What's different?
Just maybe the mentality. Just not do too much credit to the hitters and always put in my mind, you got a great defense behind you, so just go execute the pitch and let your defense play.
Has the strategy been different too, though? How you use your pitches, when you use your pitches?
Well, everything has been just depend on the game, like depend how the hitter looked like that day. We just got an idea about the scouting report. But when we're pitching, we just pitch depending on the weakness he got in that day or what pitch he not see good from you. Because everyone is different, every angle is different, the breaking balls break different for everyone. So we just had to work by our strength. So during the game, you had to realize what the pitch you control, you got the command, and you know when you're behind the count, that's the one you're gonna throw, or when you're ahead in the count, you have to create an idea what you do in that moment, and depend on what kind of hitter it is, those kind of things. Just you have to work, but that's gonna be before during the bullpen in practice. Then you have to bring it to the game.
Have you changed any of your grips or kinds of pitches that you throw since you came here, though?
No, the same grip, just the angle of my arm is bent just a little bit higher. Just that's the only difference, because the rest is just the same grip, the same trying to do the movement down instead of go side, and just control my body. Just working, feel my body and release point and be consistent about throwing in front of the ball and get the ball down.
Coaches can help a lot, but players can help too. Are there players who made you feel very comfortable here, or players who have helped you feel comfortable more than others?
Well, everyone just always been trying to just be around, trying to talk to everyone, and every time you need help, no matter who it is they're going to be around you. And, well, for me, it's been everybody. Like, I just try to talk to everyone, try to just get a good communication with everyone. And, you know, just every time I got some point, some question, I know they're going to be there and they're going to tell me what's going on. And that's fun when you got that kind of confidence when you're cheering.
Erasmo Ramirez with us on this week in Rays Baseball. And Erasmo, you're always positive. You're usually smiling. Who in your family is like that?
Well, it's most about my father. Most of the time when we together, like my sister, my father and me, everything just about be joking around, do everything just for have fun and forget about what's going on in the life. Just go and have fun and try to enjoy the day. That's always us.
And your mom and your dad were here at your last start at home. How often have they seen you pitch, and what did it mean for them to come from Nicaragua?
Well, since I got to the big league in 2012, I get the possibility, like the financial possibility, to bring my family and stay with me. And since 2012, they've been just coming to the U.S. and see me pitch. And for them, just I saw them, just they happy to be around, even no matter how I do, just they happy to see me pitching, but always they want to see me winning. So in that day, for real, I put in my mind, okay, I'm going to do everything I got and try to take the win, because I get a couple start without win, and I do. Well, that was the chance to have it after the two innings with a few pitches. In my mind, I was so positive about win, but some situation of the game, just rambles in the right spot, some bloopers, and a good contact with a power hitter, just changed everything. But anyway, just I showed and just that's baseball, and I had to just continue throwing, and I get to the eight, the first time in the year.
Which certainly is something very important to this team and also the bullpen. You had a unique start in baseball. Who got you to start playing baseball, and how? Tell us your story about how you, from Nicaragua, where there's not a lot of Major League Baseball players, El Presidente, Vicente Padilla, how did you get started in baseball and become a prospect?
Well, that was 4 years old. My sister was five, and the babysitter for us was my grandma. So she's in charge. And like every kid, we want to do something different. We just want to run around, do everything crazy. But in that moment, my grandma just realized how their parents, like her parents, never let her play nothing, because they believed they just for men, the baseball was for men, for soccer for men. So she just decided to talk to us about baseball, like talk to us, teach us about baseball, and that's when we started. 4 years old, just she started talking and learning how to throw the ball, and she made some socks. You know the socks? They rub it and make it like a little round ball, and we start playing with that kind of stuff out in the neighborhood against the neighbors, and I don't know, we start just getting better and better every time because we start loving it. And every time, just we use 5 years old, and the rest, like the neighbor, like 7 years old, 9 years old, just taller, stronger than us. My grandma just always told you, like, hey, don't be afraid about the big guys. They always, they're weak too. They always got a weak, so no problem. Just show what you got, and that's it. And since then, just every time, I've been practicing every kind of sport. And I don't know, no sport just being more strength in the baseball. So when I got to the 15 years old and got the decision to between full baseball or continue doing any kind of sport, that was an easy choice. Just baseball is the one I want to try and want to just die playing baseball. And well, when I was maybe 14, There was a guy who is from Chicago who used to come to Nicaragua and bring some equipment to any team, something from Nicaragua, because we don't have a lot of money for buy those kind of stuff. So he bought a lot of stuff. So he gave me some gloves, some cleats for play. And in that time, just everyone just happy for have those kind of stuff because, you know, your family, it's hard to find it. And my mom, I asked him about teach me about more about baseball because he was living here. He know more about baseball and we want to just be better. And at the first time, he didn't want to. But then when we were playing, my sister used to play all the time with me. She was the first base and pitcher. And me just third base, shortstop, outfield, sometimes pitcher because I just like to hit mostly in that time. So he just was surprising about us, like third baseman, first baseman, they're good, they're brothers, and they can play. And when my mom asked him, he was saying no the first year. Like when I was like 14 years old, he just decided like, okay, just you come to me too many times, so what's your kid? Where are your kids at? And when he realized was the only kids he liked, like the third baseman, the first baseman, he always throw hard, play hard, and always we been like fighting for the first spot in RBIs, average, and lead. When we pitching, we just fighting who pitch more innings, something like that. All the time we just together in those kind of leads. He just decided to teach me a little bit more about pitching. And I start learning a little bit more about how to get my arm strong, how to maybe mix the pitches, when to use the curveball, change your grips, different change your grips, and start playing around with the strike zone. Well, after that, he gave me a plan when he left to USA, and he said, when I back, if you get better, I give you opportunity, and I'm gonna give you a surprise. All right, just I don't have nothing to lose, so I just did my plan, get better. I get from 82 to 84. I was 15 years old only, so I was just throwing 84, 85 miles per hour at that time. And when he saw that, and he just like, hey, I got you surprised. Like I find you. I don't have to say beca, but it's a college, but everything paid. So the academy gonna be in charge of everything, whatever I need to eat, to dress. Yeah, just they gonna be in charge of everything. I just had to go and do my part, and just we went to see what that was out the country because Nicaragua, most of the time, they never give me the chance, the academy, because I was small. And they always said, just come back when you're 17 years old. If you grow up a little bit taller, we're going to talk about because you aren't. But it's just no thought at all. So, all right, just when I heard the opportunity in El Salvador, just in that country, it's a soccer country, but they got academy, but the academy is baseball, soccer, they mix. And we went to see how the academy looked like, how is everything. It's good, just everything is good. Just the academy is called FESA. It's in El Salvador, and the president is Jorge Bahia. And he told us the truth. He told my mom, just, okay, it's going to be hard for you. He's small, but he got ability. He sure he want to do something with his life. So I don't want to bring nothing. I want to give it a chance and see what we can find. But we wanna just do our best. And if he don't sign when he's 18 years old, at least I gonna pay him just the career university. I gonna pay the any career he want. He gonna become a professional player or be professional student. So no matter what, he gonna be a professional. So it was something about just go and do it.
How lucky now that you look back do you feel about that opportunity? Because so few players from Nicaragua would get that chance to go play in El Salvador, to be found in an academy, to in essence be found for your career. Fortunate?
Yeah, pretty much. Because it's so many times, you know, even when I get to the academy, just the same comments continue. Like, you're small, you throw hard, you got detour strike, you got quality stuff, but just too small for be a pitcher. And that's been one of the big issues when I before I signed. But just after I was 17 years old already, and it was in September. Just that's the time when Seattle can, and just the president of the academy called me and said, okay, we got a team interested in you, and he said no matter what, like the tall you are, he's going to give you the chance, and he's going to take you with 17, like the age you got. And that time, I didn't care about money. I just said, okay, yes, I want the opportunity. I heard too many stuff, so I just want to go and show what I got and see if I'm good in this.
Well, you have been, and the Rays have given, fortunately, the Mariners gave you a chance, and then the Rays gave you a chance, and things are working out so good, so far so good, so keep it up. Congratulations.
No, thank you. That's all the time. Just I keep my mind. Just you show the team who gave you the opportunity that you're going to come here and do everything you got in that day. You know, you're not going to save nothing for the next day. And it's everything, something happened, going to be just because it's not your day or just because it's had to happen, but not because you just coming weak and nervous. I just want to show everybody just every time I go on a pitch, I want to compete. Every time I go there, just forget about the 5'11 or 5'10 and a half guy in the mound. Just now you're the 6'5 in the mound, throwing. Even if you throw 92, I feel like 99. I'm going to use my fastball, my changer. I'm going to challenge all the hitters. That's one of my scent. What I think in every time I go to the mound. And just show the fans we want to win the game. We're positive, and we want to see everybody happy.
It's good. It's working. So keep it up. Thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you for the chance.
Erasmo Ramirez with us on This Week in Rays Baseball, and we continue after this on the Rays Baseball Network. Welcome back to This Week in Rays Baseball. I'm Neil Solons. Today, if you were unaware, we mentioned earlier a watch party, which was scheduled out of the Guy Harvey Outpost of Tradewinds Island Resorts on St. Pete Beach, has moved inside. It's still over at the Guy Harvey Outpost, but just at the Rumfish Grill. Come out and enjoy as the Rays get set to take on the Red Sox. Now, this week, of course, the trading deadline. One of the big names dealt, one David Price. For his second straight year, his last start before being traded, Price started at Tropicana Field, and I spoke with David before starting against the Rays about what it was like being back.
I mean, returning last year, everything was all so fresh, you know, and coming back this year, you know, I haven't gotten to see a lot of these guys, you know, since spring training or since the last time I was here at the Trop, you know, last game of spring training, so it's so good to see everybody.
Would you call it easier?
It is easier, you know, I mean, it's absolutely, it's easier, you know, just to get to come back and see everybody, you know, just it brings back a lot of good memories.
You got to see a couple guys at the All-Star game, though. How proud are you? You're a mentor to Arch about what he's accomplished this year, and also Brad Boxberger and his growth.
Yeah, I mean, just to get to see all the hard work that Arch has done kind of come to fruition is, that's beautiful. You know, you love to see hard work get rewarded, and that's, you know, what Coach Corbin, you know, always told me. You know, this game recognizes hard work, and you know it does, and that's why Archer was an All-Star, and that's why Brad was an All-Star. So, and Brad has a sweet Frenchie named Ralph, and you know that definitely is cool whenever other Frenchie owners get to go to the All-Star game as well.
And obviously, in Chris's case, it's not a relationship of having the French bulldog, but also, but in his case, it's the bond that you guys have, the brotherly relationship. How much do you touch base during the course of this season before the All-Star game?
All the time. I mean, every other day. You know, I mean, we talk all the time. You know, he's gonna text me the day I pitch. I'm gonna text him on the day he pitched, and then after the games, we're gonna talk about it. You know, and that's just what we've done. And you know, I enjoy it. You know, he knows that I'm here for him, and I know that he's there for me. So it's just we both have that mutual respect for each other. We both know how hard one another work, and you know, just to kind of have that bond with somebody that's not on your team, you know, it's good.
You obviously have had a terrific season. Where do you think you've improved from a year ago? I know you're always working to get better.
you know, being able to probably execute pitches a little bit more, you know, being able to recognize situations, holding runners, you know, at first base. You know, I've been able to control the running game really well this year, and just being able to get guys out of the strike zone, or be able to get guys out of the strike zone. You know, that's something me and Hickey really always talked about. And last year I had a lot of strikeouts, but I didn't really get guys out of the strike zone by design. You know, if it happened, it happened. But if not, you know, I was trying to throw my backdoor cutter, which is going to end up a strike, and stuff like that, and throwing my changeup or trying to throw my fastball by somebody in the strike zone. And that's, that's really tough to do, especially at this level. And, being able to recognize that my stuff is good enough to get guys out of the strike zone, especially whenever I'm ahead, that's what I got to do. That's what I got to try and do tomorrow with Longo.
Is it weird trying to face him? I mean, obviously you guys have friendship. I know we talked about that last time, but how difficult is it to face a friend?
It's just the worst, man. I mean, I want to see these guys do so well. I mean, every time he hits a homer, he hit his 10th homer the other day. You know, I'm always texting him. I'm texting Logan. You know, Logan's got 11. Just Beckham, whenever he's hitting homers, I'm texting him. And Kevin Pillar is robbing him of homers in Toronto. I'm texting him, he better not, you know, hit a ball to second base wherever you're playing, because you better, you know, take a hit away from him now. You know, just it's tough pitching against your friends, but you got to go out there and, you know, it's got to be business.
I know you obviously are very good at blocking things out. Also, I'm curious, since you mentioned Evan, what have you learned from Maggie and from Victor Martinez, some great hitters, about pitching? Because I'm sure you share thoughts with the two of them.
Quite a bit. I mean, honestly, some of it most of it I don't feel like I can share, because, I mean, it's kind of their approach, and that's not my business to tell them, you know, everybody kind of how they go about their business. But I mean, those guys are very special. I mean, they're true professionals. I mean, they're definitely professional hitters, and their approach, I mean, especially Miggy's, it blows you away at times, you know, what he does, you know, out there on the field, and not just hitting. I mean, just his baseball IQ is through the roof. I mean, it's off the charts, you know, how high his baseball IQ is. And I don't think he gets enough credit for that, because everybody thinks, you know, he's just out there having fun and messing around, which he is. And that's, you know, that's also part of the reason why he is who he is and why he's as good as he is, because he views this as a game. But his baseball IQ is very high.
And I know how competitive you are. If I would have said the Rays and Tigers have virtually the same record at the end of July, most would have said they're in playoff contention, and I guess they are. But how tough has it been to be on a team that's right around 500 or just under right now for you?
It's tough, because we have a very talented group of guys. You know, our 25-man roster is ridiculously talented. And, you know, for us to be right around 500 right now, you know, we know that it's our fault. You know, we just haven't played baseball the way that we should have played baseball, you know. And you can't blame it on injuries or whatever you want to blame it on, because every team, every organization is going to go through, you know, their injury stretch, or they're going to have their injuries throughout the season. But, you know, we know that we can play better, and we know how much baseball is left in this season, and we have, you know, the guys in the locker room and the tools to go out there and finish very strong.
That was David Price before his trade. Now he's a member of the Toronto Blue Jays, and now we'll see if he can finish strong with Toronto. Perhaps his last start with the Blue Jays could be the end of the season at Tropicana Field, also with Toronto in the hunt for the final wild card spot. Joining us now to discuss what certainly has been a strange week throughout Major League Baseball, and with the Rays for that matter, a guy who's covered them since day one, Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times, joins us from Fenway Park in Boston. Mark, thanks for being with us on This Week in Rays Baseball.
Sure, Neil, anytime. I figured you would have talked to David knowing he was going to be traded to the Blue Jays. You're usually on top of everything.
Well, we couldn't get him afterwards, so we figured we'd give people a little insight into what his thought process was beforehand. And if I would have told you the Rays would have beaten David Price and the team he was facing 10-2, you probably would have said it was probably a good week for the Rays. But it certainly was not, especially with what happened around the deadline and then the last 2 days in Boston especially.
Yeah, it's been a tough week. It's been an interesting week. Starting maybe going backward to trading David DeJesus at a time when the Rays were looking for offense, then going up into the deadline, not finding a match to fill or to join a lineup that, you know, Matt Silverman said there was no glaring hole to fill. at the deadline, and then trading from their bullpen, Kevin Jepson, to a team that they're competing with, the Minnesota Twins. So it kind of interesting message there. I mean, I think, you know, the Rays have been consistent, though, in saying they feel confident in this group that they have, and that with the return of Desmond Jennings and Drew Smyly, that they're going to be able to stay in this race. And then yesterday, just a very, very tough day. I mean, a sloppy game on Friday, one of the Rays, you know, worst games, or, you know, maybe not the worst, but one of their worst games of the season Friday night here in Boston. And then just a game yesterday where Matt Moore, once again, you know, taking them out of the game, really, you know, from any competitive standpoint, with a rough start. I mean, they do battle back, get close, and they make some other mistakes. But, you know, the decision made after the game to send Matt Moore to AAA, and then also Steven Souza gets hit by a pitch, and it looked like he'd be okay. And then it turns out not only is he not okay, he's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks. That, you know, pushes him into sometime mid-September or later, if he even makes it back, you know, depending on how he heals. So, really, a tough stretch for the Rays. A lot of moving parts. Once again, Mikey Mott flew up here from Durham on Friday, flew back to Durham on Saturday, flew back to Boston this morning, and he's in the lineup. Welcome to the big leagues again, kid. And, yeah, there'll be another move tomorrow, Neil. So it's been a lot of moving parts, a lot of things going on, and they're still losing a lot of games.
Let's get to some of those moving parts. We'll start with Matt Moore. Were you at all surprised based on the fact that they do have all these off days and they really don't need a fifth starter for nearly 3 weeks?
Well, I think that was as much a factor. I think there were three parts to this. I think one was, because of all the off days, they can go with their best four starters. I think that was part of it. I think how Matt Moore was pitching and costing them a chance to be competitive in some of the games he started was part of it. And I think the fact that maybe this is better for Matt Moore, and ultimately, you know, getting Matt Moore back, and if it's not this year, then next year, to his top form, is a huge part of the Rays' overall plan. And, you know, giving him a chance to maybe be in that less pressurized environment, pitch every 5 days. You know, if they want him to go 100 pitches, he'll go 100 pitches at Durham, whether he's given up one run or eight runs. They'll just let him get the work in. So I think all three of those components factored into it. But, you know, if they weren't in the race at this point, it may have been a slightly different outcome.
And certainly they are still in, so the question is, okay, how do they fill Steven Souza Jr.'s role? You mentioned some of it on your blog today. Kind of give our listeners a feel for what they may do going forward.
Well, sure. I think initially, you know, what Kevin Cash said this morning is it's going to be mix and match, which is probably could have been the team slogan for this year, the way it's played out. But, you know, you're going to see Kiermaier in center, and then they're going to have to just kind of fill in. Brandon Guyer will play some more against right-handed pitching. He's mostly played against left-handed pitching. You see Mikey Mottuk out there today. He'll get some more opportunity. You know, Jaso or Sizemore, one of those guys will be out there. There may be some days where they're both out there and, you know, giving them the potential of an all left-handed outfield even. I mean, there's lots of different ways they can do this. I think there will be another roster move tomorrow. It won't be Richie Schaefer for the people that are hoping it will be. And it's just going to be a question now if, you know, the Rays go in the farm system, they could come up. They've got three more lefty today and three more lefties in Chicago. They could go with the right-handed power bat, J.P. Arencibia. They could go with some versatility. Taylor Motter's a guy whose name, you know, I heard a little chatter about yesterday, a guy who's been doing a really good job at Durham. There's also some people on the waiver wire, and the first set of waivers here, I believe, clear tomorrow at 1 or 2 o'clock. And Danny Valencia is a guy the Rays are familiar with. He's beaten up on them and David Price, actually, quite a bit over the years. That might be a guy who potentially fits in if he gets to them. There's some other names out there as well.
And being the fact, actually, that they've lost a couple games may actually help them in terms of the waiver wire, because the teams, so fans understand, from the bottom up get to claim somebody.
Right. It's yeah, depending on what league the player is in, too. So, you know, just using Valencia, for example, because he was with the Blue Jays, so it goes through the American League first. So the team with the worst record in the American League gets the first shot, and it kind of goes in that order. And sometimes players are claimed outright. Sometimes they're claimed and they can be pulled back by the team that puts them out there. And then those two teams work out a trade. And sometimes that, but once a guy's pulled back, he can't be put on waivers again. So there's a little bit of gamesmanship that goes on. And sometimes a team puts a guy out there, he gets claimed, they let him go. The Rays did that 1 year with Jose Canseco way back in the Devil Rays days. And he ended up a Yankee and the Rays got out from under the rest of his contract that year.
And I know you were on the conference call with Matt Silverman after Kevin Jepson was traded, and Matt did mention that the possibility of adding offense may be more likely in August due to the waiver wire, and since he was designated for assignment, it would seem, at least on paper, that Valencia would be the kind of fit that might be right.
Yeah, and, you know, a guy, and even if it's a short-term stint, I mean, you know, when they brought Grady Sizemore up, they told him it would just be a few days. It ended up being just about a month, and now he's back yet again, so... You know, as we've seen so many times this year, that so many different things can happen. And, you know, maybe a more experienced hitter like a Danny Valencia, you know, I could say, who's a little bit more well-rounded rather than a guy who's more of a power guy like Arencibia has shown this year. There's just different ways they can go. And it may be that, you know, we're all in Chicago tomorrow sitting at the field before they know exactly what they're doing and scramble to get a guy up there.
Do you think they're going to carry 11 position players with the days off, or do they add an eighth pitcher as well regarding Matt Moore?
I think it'll be a position player added. I don't think they need an extra pitcher right now. Now, that could change depending on how the bullpen, you know, how heavily taxed the bullpen is today. Obviously, they had to use a lot of innings out of the pen yesterday, and inefficient innings, too. I mean, all those guys averaged over 20 pitches an inning, or threw over 20 pitches an inning, and Colome for his two. But you know, everyone threw a lot yesterday. So I think depending on how deep Jake Odorizzi goes today, how much they have to use the bullpen. And also in that little tweak they made to the rotation that kind of went under the radar yesterday, by splitting up Archer and Odorizzi, that allows them, I think, to better use the bullpen under the theory that the days that Carnes and Erasmo Ramirez pitch, they're more likely to have to use more innings out of the pen.
Excellent point. Now, today in Rays Tales, you touched on one, Kurt Casale and his story. What's your take after all you learned about him this week as to what his future may be?
I think, you know, first of all, Kurt Casale is a really smart guy, and talking to Kurt Casale is kind of fun. I'd like to see him and Chris Archer maybe have a long debate one day, because they're both pretty smart, bright guys that have some thoughts on things. And, you know, I think Kurt Casale, you know, the rep when he came over to the Rays was he could hit and he didn't catch very well. I think he's worked very hard on his catching, and he shared a great detail, which I never would have known, is that on games when he's not starting, when you don't see him on the bench in the fifth or sixth inning, that's because he's down in the cage with Jamie Nelson working on blocking balls and throwing and things like that, just to get prepped in case he does come in later in the day and, you know, doesn't want to do too much before the game. So I really think he's tried to make himself as well-rounded as he can, and obviously the bat can be the difference maker. I mean, the Rays have had plenty of catchers who are good at framing pitches, good at throwing, good at blocking balls. If he can continue to hit, you know, obviously not at two homers a night, and he's kind of come back to earth quite a bit since last week, but if he can give them some steady offense with the occasional home run, I think that could be very appealing, and he could make himself, you know, their main guy, I think, for the next couple of years.
Mark, good stuff, and I recommend people read it at TampaBay.com. Thanks for joining us on This Week in Rays Baseball.
Anytime, Neil. Highlight of the week.
That's Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times. Now, kids, you can bring Raymond home with them Sunday, August 9th. That would be your highlight of the week. That's when the Rays play the Mets. Kids 14 and under get a Raymond soap dispenser presented by Advantica. While supplies last, for tickets, call 888-FAN-RAYS or visit RaysBaseball.com. Rays up. When we continue on This Week in Rays Baseball, hear more about the trading deadline from President of Baseball Operations Matt Silverman and also Charlotte manager Michael Johns, who saw one of the pieces the Rays traded for. You're listening to This Week in Rays Baseball on the Rays Baseball Network. Welcome back to This Week in Rays Baseball. I'm Neil Solons. A reminder, our watch party is still over at the Guy Harvey Outpost of Tradewinds Island Resorts on St. Pete Beach. It's just inside with the inclement weather over at the Rumfish Grill. This week, as we talked about with Mark Topkin moments ago, the Rays made two trades before the deadline. They dealt David Jesus to the Angels for 20-year-old righty Edward Lopez. Then right before the deadline, moved Kevin Jepson to Minnesota for a pair of young starting pitchers, Alexis Tapia from Venezuela and Shiwei Hu of Taiwan. And I asked President of Baseball Operations Matt Silverman to break down the trades.
You know, with DeJesus, we expect Jennings to come back in the next couple of weeks and want to make sure that we have room for him and accommodate him. There was some financial relief that we were able to gain, as well as a pitching prospect, and we'll be able to put those financial resources back to use, whether it's this year or in future years, and hopefully not be able to miss a beat with the guys who can absorb those at-bats. With Jepson, we're going to miss his performance at the back end of the bullpen. At the same time, the bullpen is a strength of our club and our organization. It's going to require some of our existing pen guys to step up and play a bigger role, but we're confident that they can do so. We're also going to get a healthy Drew Smyly back, and so it's going to be a pretty loaded staff. We're going to have to work through that, but it's better to have a logjam than to have too few pitchers, and that's something we expect to be working on as he continues to get healthy.
How much did the progress of both Jennings and Smyly impact your ability to make these deals?
It certainly helped. The fact that we have a pretty good timetable for both of those players gave us a little bit more confidence to make this move in advance of them coming back. If it were later in the month, if it were September, it might have changed the dynamics of the trade deadline, but knowing that they're on rehab and we can see that the finish line gave us a little bit more comfort to make these trades.
Especially with the bullpen, you've had a lot of days off recently since the All-Star break, six and then a days off, and then you get a two-game series against Atlanta sandwiched around days off. Did that also figure into losing an important bullpen piece?
It was on the margin. We recognize that there are a number of off days coming up. We're going to be able to keep our pen fresher. September comes, you're able to replenish and add to the roster. And so the depth isn't as important during this stretch. But whenever you remove someone of Jepson's talent, there's a chance to take a step back, and we just need to rely upon some of the guys like Geltz and Cedeno and Colome to step up into maybe a bigger role and make sure that we don't miss a beat.
Cedeno, Colome have all gotten more swings and misses lately. Did that also help make the decision a little easier?
A little easier. I mean, Cedeno has been great for us all year and really played a nice role moving beyond the lefty specialist and someone who can get multiple outs and possibly get through an inning. Colome making the transition from starter to bullpen. We've seen his stuff tick up. He's starting to embrace that role, and I could see him getting some more high-leverage moments depending on how the games play out. But certainly Kevin and the coaching staff has a lot of confidence in Colome, and he can be a big factor for us the rest of the way.
Last year, different scenario, but you trade David Price at the deadline. Part of it was also the return you might get in the offseason. Did that also dictate the deal in Jepson, that you got two starting pitching prospects that are both young that you may not have gotten if you decided to move them in the offseason?
It's part of it. We looked at our bullpen and thought that it was an area of strength of ours, and we're always looking to make sure that we cash in some depth. It didn't have to be Jepson. We certainly had conversations about almost every player on our roster, but there was a lot of activity on our bullpen, and I understand why, because it's full of really good arms. When we are faced with a trade, we're looking ahead. We're looking at our system, and it was very difficult for us to pass up the opportunity to bring in a couple of young arms, stash them away in our system, add them to the collection that we have, and we wake up a few years from now and we're very thankful that we have them.
Fans obviously are always wondering, how do you add when you're this close, when you're in a playoff hunt? And usually the discussion always comes around offense. How close did you come to adding any?
We had a lot of conversations. I feel like August might be a better month for us to add offense. We're going to get Jennings back, but during the waiver process, we'll have an opportunity to see what's out there. Given where we are in the standings, we're close to the wild card, but we're in front of a lot of other teams in terms of waiver claims, so we're going to be able to see some activity and possibly pick up some offense there. At the same time, if our offense performs up to its standards and our guys achieve the way they think they can, we should be in good shape.
And that's President of Baseball Operations Matt Silverman now joining us to discuss one of the players that the Rays acquired, and the one who's furthest along among those the Rays got is Charlotte manager Michael Johns. Michael, thanks for being with us. You got to see Shi Wei Hu three times this year, correct? What impressed you about him?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Nolan. I saw him three too many times, I can tell you that. He was really, really good against us. I think the biggest thing that sticks out with him is he's got pitchability. And what that means is he can pretty much throw any pitch he wants in any count. It seemed like when we were able to get to him a little bit, we'd have runners second, third, no outs, and he was able to get out of it. He just has that kind of makeup, that kind of mentality, and that kind of stuff. He's got three above-average pitches. He can reach back and get up to 94, but he'll generally pitch around 89, 91 with some sink. He's got what I think, and we're not real sure yet, it's either a split finger or a palm ball, but whatever it is, it's really tough to hit. It seems like it just drops right out of the zone. And then just the makeup and mound presence, it's just off the charts. So we're really excited to have him. I know we have a really good hitting team, and we've had a really good hitting team all year, and it seems like he's just kind of carved us up every outing, from spring training to extended spring training, the full season. I think I've seen this guy probably too many times. I'm going to be glad to see him at Port Charlotte uniform since.
As a kid who's only 21 years of age, too, he's younger than the average player in the league, correct?
Yeah, he is. He is. It seems like the average age is anywhere from 23 to 25. So, yeah, you wouldn't know it by watching him. He got in last night, and I got a chance to talk to him for a while, and you can just tell he's cut out of a different mold. He's mature. He knows what he wants to get out of this game, and we're glad to have him.
You guys have obviously had a terrific pitching staff over the course of the season and several players promoted. So, again, we're chatting with Michael Johns, the Charlotte manager. How does he fit in, and how's it helped to have that additional competition?
Yeah, I think he's going to fit in nicely, and you're right. I think we've lost four-fifths of our starting rotation from day one, and we've lost a lot of guys out of the bullpen, and that's really good. Obviously, we're in player development first, and anytime we can get guys at Double A, it's our goal, get them closer to the big leagues. But I guess to answer your question, yeah, I think he's going to fit in nicely. He's just going to push other guys to get better. It seems like that's what the pitching staff has done. But it'll be nice. It'll be nice to see how he goes about his business, how he likes to throw his sideline, because he's going to bring some new information to us too, which is always neat in a trade. So we're kind of looking forward to us getting to know him and him getting to know us.
You take a look at a lot of the players the Rays have acquired during the course of trades in the last year. You had a chance to see a lot of them. You have had Willy Adames the whole year. Jake Bowers came over in the Will Myers trade. And now who? Has this been a good year for the league and the Florida State League in terms of talent, too?
Also Andrew Velasquez last year.
Yes.
Yeah, it has. It has. And I don't know why. It seems like it's kind of funny how the guys we're traded for have just happened to be in the league that I've been in. But certainly a lot of work goes into this. There's a lot of scouting that goes into this, a lot of phone calls, a lot of sleepless nights into what we're getting. So I know that our front office was comfortable with the trade and are all the trades, and we are too. But to answer your question, there's a lot of talent in this league. I think a lot of the talent was on our team, especially from day one. And then those guys get moved up to Double A. But, yeah, every team has their few guys that kind of stand out. And you kind of write those guys up and you keep track of them and just kind of see how they progress, because it's kind of a fun thing to do even if we don't acquire them.
And certainly, you know, a lot of people like to look at, from a fan perspective, guys who are high-level prospects. And MLB.com and Baseball America kind of redid their top 50s or top 100s. And in both cases, there were three kids who you had this year who were in those lists. And one of them is Brent Honeywell, who's with you now. Another is Willy Adames, who's with you now. And another is Blake Snell, who was with you at the start of the year. Can you give your kind of thumbnail on each of those kids, since you've had each of them to some extent this year?
Yeah, and you know, they're all unique in their own way. I think I saw Blake Snell's first pitch in professional baseball in Princeton. Or at least certainly his first few outings, and just to watch his maturation and development over the last few years has just been really neat. He always had the stuff, and I think our pitching coordinators, our pitching coaches have done a great job with him of kind of honing in on what he needed to do to be successful, and it's been awesome. It's been awesome to watch him shoot for the organization, and when you talk about left-handers that get up to 97, 98 with, you know, three above-average off-speed pitches, it's usually going to equate to success, and his makeup and just his maturity has really been fun to, as coaches, to kind of to watch develop. And then Willy Adames was a guy that, you know, obviously we got in the Price trade last year, and I was able to have him all year last year and or a half a year. But just watching him play on the other side of the ball, you can just tell he's made for this. He's cut out for this. This is what he wants to do. He loves coming to the park. He's the same guy every day, and he's 19 years old. And there is enough adjectives to explain Willy Adames and how he goes about his business. And on top of that, he's a great player. I mean, he's just going to be – he's a special guy, a special player that's probably going to hit in the middle of the lineup as he continues to develop. And he's going to probably stick at shortstop. He's really, really done a nice job getting himself to be a better shortstop. He's gotten quickness. He's gotten internal clock. And he certainly has the arm strength to play there. And then Brent Honeywell's a guy, you know, everybody in the organization knows, because he has that kind of personality. He's the kind of guy, he likes to talk baseball. He's a confident kid. He's not going to be overwhelmed. And I think he's the first guy in my career we let go 9 innings in a shutout baseball over Tampa because it seemed like he wasn't even breathing hard in the 8th inning and his velocity kept creeping. So he keeps getting better every outing. His first few outings here were not, I think, what he wanted, and he just learned from him, and he got better, and he's got three above-average pitches. So it seems like he would be a guy that would probably shoot through the system as well. I just got to credit our scouting for a lot of these guys and our pro scouting, and it's just such a combined effort to try to comprise an organization, and I think that we've done a pretty good job of it.
Well, you take a look at what the team has done in Port Charlotte this year, and the record that you guys have, 15 to 20 games over 500 much of the year, winning the first half, and a lot of kids promoted, and still a lot of young kids that are with you right now that are under league average age. Has it been interesting for you to kind of retool and get a bunch of different kids during the course of the year?
Yeah, it has. It's been fun. It's been fun to watch guys develop and getting to know guys that maybe I didn't know before. But again, at the end of the day, it's about them. It's about what they can do and trying to get them to AA and AAA in the big leagues. And it has. It has been a unique year. You know, I think we clinched really early, and that was good. So we were able to get some guys moving and then get some guys from Bowling Green. So this is probably, in my mind, the most movement we've had, which is a good thing. I think it means we have better players. We have good players. I think it speaks volumes to where our minor league system is.
Well, congratulations on what you've done so far. Thanks for the input on who, and we'll certainly be watching what the Stone Crabs are doing the rest of the way.
All right, thanks for having me, Neil. Appreciate it.
And that is one Michael Johns, manager of the Charlotte Stone Crabs. Now, he referenced Willie Adames, the 19-year-old shortstop, was actually highlighted in our latest Prospect Spotlight show, where we asked Willie about how he learned English so quickly after just a year and a half in the United States.
With my teammates, you know, they always have been helping me, so they always, like, when I say something wrong, they correct me. So I think that was that's the thing that helped me to get better in English. And I live with Andrew Velasquez and Kian Wong, and they speak English, and Velasquez speaks Spanish, so he helped me in English to get better. They both helped me, so I think that's helped me to get better every day.
You're getting better at English, you're getting better at baseball. Where are you better this year in baseball?
I think I'm better hitting right now, yeah. But I'm working on my defense every day, you know, to get better. To get better throwing, because I think that's that I have to get better throwing. You know, I'm working every day to get better.
What is to you, because shortstop's a hard position, what's a good shortstop?
I mean, when you always stay in the game and you watch like every batter, every hitter, and you know like who's running, who's in the box. I think that's the shortstop have to do, you know, like know the other team. I mean, you know, I started to play when I was like 50 years old. So like when I was 10, I say, you know, I want to be big league. So I start to play and watch Derek Jeter playing, and I say, man, I want to be like that. Like how he is, I want to be like him.
How close do you think you are to being a big leaguer?
I don't know right now. I don't know. But the only thing that I know is that I do my best every day, and it's not to me. I mean, I play hard every day, so I think that's gonna make me want to move to the big league.
And that's Willie Adames on Prospect Spotlight. You can view the latest episode at raysbaseball.com/prospect spotlight. By the way, if you're looking at prospect rankings, here are the up-to-date rankings mid-season. MLB Pipeline's top 100 had Willie Adames at 44, Blake Snell at 49, Brent Honeywell at 57, Garrett Whitley at 81, and Daniel Robertson at 93. Meanwhile, Baseball America, they do a top 50, and they had Honeywell at 40, Snell at 41, and Adames at 44. And a reminder to thank all of our guests, Michael Johns, Willie Adames, Erasmo Ramirez, David Price, Mark Topkin, and Matt Silverman for joining us. Now, next week, you're going to get the chance to know catcher Kurt Casale a little bit better. Certainly, if you ever have something you'd like to hear on our show, all you have to do is tweet me at Neil Solons. For my producer, Jason Berenger, I am Neil Solons. Stay tuned. The pregame show is next. It's the Rays and the Red Sox as the Rays try and get one up in Boston. You've been listening to the Rays Baseball Network.
Thank you for listening to This Week in Rays Baseball.
Driven in the air to center field. Kiermaier going back at the wall, jumps up and makes the catch.
If you missed any of the show, catch it on archive at raysbaseball.com/radio.
3-2 to Looney is launched in the air right center field. This one's on its way, and the Rays have tied it up. A homer for James Looney, and it's 5-5.
Keep it right here. The Rays pregame show is next.